Cryptography is a very political technology. Historically, it's only been used by governments.
Cryptography is defined essentially in the dictionary as the art and the science of secret writing. It's all about scrambling information. It's a very ancient art, practiced by such people as Julius Caesar some 2,000 years ago in ancient Rome, and even before that in Mesopotamia and in China. It's the whole concept of keeping messages secret between two parties who wish to converse privately.
I just got word from 99. Did you get to the machine in time?
Our ability to break codes has a major impact on how wars have proceeded and how well we've done and so on. So this is not just a game. This is serious business for government.
Information
from all the
people.
This isn't just about large
numbers.
Serious about cryptography.
You mean codes? I mean unbreakable.
The forerunners of modern computers were invented mainly to solve cryptographic problems.
During the war, the Second World War, in Germany particularly, a particular machine was used called an Enigma machine. The machine itself rather resembled a large portable typewriter. As they typed in each letter of what we call the plain text message, that's the message you want to keep secret, a light would come up under another letter on the keyboard. So the Enigma machine was what we call an encrypting or a scrambling machine, which was used to scramble messages in such a way that if letters or groups of letters were the same, appeared many times in a message, then indeed the same ciphertext or encrypted message would not come out. And indeed, one of the very first computers developed by a very famous man in computing, Alan Turing, was used in the early days at a place called Bletchley Park to decipher some of these machines.
That's Bill Cayley from the Queensland University of Technology.
How is this possible? Cryptography systems are based on mathematical problems so complex they cannot be solved without a key.
Janik must have figured out a way to solve those problems without the key, and he hardwired it into that chip.
Turn it off!
Cryptography, having been used effectively in wartime, became a powerful weapon for international intelligence agencies. During the Cold War, they armed themselves with the means to spy and monitor communications, exclusively holding the keys to secret codes. This control became chaotic in the 70s with the birth of public key cryptography. New mathematical algorithms enabled a break from traditional one-key cryptography. New systems allowed for two keys, private and public. The public key could be widely distributed, while the private key was well guarded by the owner. This ability to communicate in unbreakable codes has caused concern and posed a major problem for government.
Today we live in the information age where everyone has a personal computer and a modem, and it's just getting more and more like that. So there is a need for people to send data back and forth for ordinary commerce, for private electronic mail, and you can't send electronic mail privately unless you use encryption. Paper mail is sent in envelopes. Generally speaking, most people don't send their paper mail on postcards. But with electronic mail, it's like sending it on a postcard. If you don't want people to read your electronic mail, then you have to encrypt it. Otherwise, your electronic mail passes from computer to computer across the internet and can be intercepted and read by anyone along the way, including governments. And so to protect the health of democracy and to inoculate the body politic against possible government abuses in the future, I felt that we should be building a technology infrastructure that has secure electronic mail.
Phil Zimmerman designed cryptographic software, which provides an envelope for electronic mail. PGP, or Pretty Good Privacy, is being used extensively here in Australia and has become a worldwide de facto standard. The popularity of Phil Zimmerman's product has him in trouble with the feds in the USA.
Pretty Good Privacy, or PGP as we call it, is a program that runs on a personal computer that encrypts electronic mail, letting you send electronic mail to people that you've never met without the prior exchange of cryptographic keys. It uses a technology called public key cryptography to do this. It has spread all around the world and has become a worldwide de facto standard for the encryption of email. I am under criminal investigation because our government here has laws against the export of encryption software. They regard it as a munition. The State Department, sort of like our foreign ministry here, has rules about exporting munitions. They have a munitions list. Anything on the munitions list can only be exported with a license from the State Department. And encryption software is one of the items on the munitions list. They generally don't grant licenses for the export of encryption software unless the encryption software is weak. In other words, it can be easily broken by the government. PGP is strong cryptography, so there's not much chance of them granting an export license for PGP. But because PGP was published as free software, it just spread all over the place and was all over the United States in a very short time. And it didn't take long for it to spread overseas after thousands of people in the United States had it, and people just started giving it to their friends, and they gave it to their friends. Pretty soon, somehow it got overseas. Our government is taking the position that electronic publication of PGP is the same thing as exporting it. So that's why I'm under criminal investigation.
Sorry to waste your time, gentlemen. I don't work for the government.
We know. National Security Agency.
Oh, the other guys I hear breathing are the other end of my phone.
No, that's the FBI. We're not chartered for domestic surveillance.
Oh, I see. You just overthrow governments, set up friendly dictators.
No, that's the CIA. We protect our government's communications. We try to break the other fellow's codes. We're the good guys, Marty.
Gee, I can't tell you what a relief that is, Dick.
Maria Cantwell, our congressional representative from Redmond, Washington, where Microsoft has its headquarters, has introduced legislation that would lift all the export controls on encryption software. But the NSA is against such a law. They want to keep the export controls in place. The mission of the NSA is signals intelligence, and that's something that they still want to preserve as their mission. And if widespread encryption software becomes available, then they're afraid that they won't be able to decipher as much traffic. We need stronger encryption methods, and PGP uses stronger encryption methods, but we need these encryption methods to become more widely available to make people's private and business communications safe from major governments. There's more governments than just the U.S. government to be concerned about here. The French government is notorious for using their national technical means to listen in on conversations and supply that information to their own domestic businesses. The internet has potential for decentralizing power to some extent. There are social structures arising on the internet that are unique to internet. It's possible to have digital cash that's non-traceable. Transactions could be conducted using cryptography and the internet. There's all kinds of interesting social experiments that could be unfolding now.
They started the trace.
Business, please.
It's my dime. I'll ask the questions. Who are you?
Well, the problem with the internet is that unlike telephone, which is extremely hard to analyze automatically, you've got to have people sitting listening. So it's an extraordinarily expensive and difficult exercise. With email, you have a stream of ASCII data, and ASCII data is analyzable in real time by any machine that is plugged in on the network that happens to be owned by the CIA, ASIO, or whichever other agency plugs itself in. What that means is that the occurrence of more than three words which are deemed to be seditious or deemed to be indicative of terrorist activities or drug dealings or whatever, the computer program clicks over and your message goes into a pile, and therefore the name of the sender and the name of the recipient goes into a pile of people that we have had reason to monitor in the past. It's that kind of suspicion building that can be automated through what I call data valence. Those are the real fears with text messaging compared to voice messaging.
You're listening to Roger Clark, Reader and Information Systems at Australian National University and spokesperson on privacy issues.
The idea of these spook agencies is that they need to be more efficient in the same way as every government agency needs to be more efficient in its usage of taxpayers' money. In order to do that, what they have to do is automate their surveillance. They can, at present, with the budget they've got, only subject a relatively small number of people to surveillance because they have to have people physically sitting listening to telephone calls. By having a computer system which will do that monitoring for them and will throw exceptions out in front of their operational staff, they're able to spread their surveillance net much, much wider. Now, if it were physically possible to write surveillance algorithms such that it only pulled out the crooks and the cheats, we'd all be delighted. Unfortunately, there are many conversations which mention nasty words like sedition and drugs and Aunt Sally and brown bags and all those other keywords that are fed in. Well, I've just mentioned them, so I'm sorry. Our conversation, if we were doing it in text, is now in that database, you're in that database, and I'm in that database under suspicion because of the usages of words in a message.
I demand the cone of silence.
Max, do we have to?
Of course, with classified information like this.
All right. Cone of silence.
Well, Max?
What, Chief?
Where is it?
What?
Headquarters.
Headquarters?
Chaos.
Oh, chaos.
Had enough.
Well, what's the matter, Chief?
What's the matter? Didn't you hear that echo?
Didn't I hear what?
Echo, echo, echo.
Oh, yes. I heard it that time.
Well, I just got some electronic mail last week from a reporter in Bangkok who is in contact with some political opposition groups in Burma using PGP, and they're being taught to use it in jungle training camps using portable computers. And they're taking that knowledge and training others in other jungle training camps, and it's helping morale over there. Major governments have cryptography, but now it's possible for disempowered groups to have cryptography that's as good as that used by major governments. Someone in Latvia sent me this email on the day that Boris Yeltsin was shelling his parliament building in October. Phil, I wish you to know, let it never be, but if dictatorship takes over Russia, your PGP is widespread from Baltic to Far East now and will help democratic people if necessary. Thanks. Singapore, for example, I can easily imagine embracing Clipper with the kind of society that Singapore has with, they're already a surveillance society with video cameras and electronic monitoring devices and financial transaction monitoring everywhere. Putting Clipper into that kind of a society would be easy to do. If in those countries they don't have enough citizen opposition, then there's the danger that Clipper could spread horizontally around the world and thus become entrenched as an international standard.
Public key cryptography has two great advantages. One is it's provided us with a mechanism for digital signatures, which are extremely valuable, especially as we're going to use networks more for electronic commerce. And the other thing that it's given us is a way of exchanging secret keys, which are the keys that are used for encryption. So it provides a way of disseminating those and exchanging those so that you can then carry on your secure communications.
So are you opposed to people like Bill Zimmerman releasing something like Pretty Good Privacy? Do you think that's a good standard that most people should adopt?
Well, no, definitely. I don't think it's a standard that most people should adopt. First of all, it doesn't solve my criteria for user-friendliness. The average people are not going to use any kind of encryption unless they can basically get it with the push of a button, and that's all they have to do. Right now, using his system is considerably more complicated than that.
Don't
Dorothy Denning is a world-leading cryptographer. She's also the reviewer of the Clipper system, a system designed by the US government's National Security Agency, the NSA. Intended to increase its surveillance potential now and for future communications, the Clipper chip has received great opposition from business and civil liberties groups, although Professor Denning defends the government's position to control the keys.
We need Clipper chip because, first of all, what we'd like to have is, you know, a secure way of communicating. And so this will provide that secure way of communicating on the telephone, which is what it's really designed for, and doesn't require a lot of effort on the part of people to use it. But in doing all that as a society, I think that we want to do it in a way so that what we won't do is end up creating this safe haven for criminals to conspire and undertake criminal activity in a way that shuts out law enforcement. You'd use it to secure your telephone communications, and the chip would be embedded in a device, and you'd basically just, you know, push a button on the device saying, go secure, and the person at the other end would do the same, and then the communications would get encrypted. And what it will do is scramble up all the communications so that if somebody's listening in, they won't be able to understand what you're saying. At the same time, the chip will put out some information such that if the government has a court order to do a wiretap of the communications, they're able to get access to encryption keys that will allow them to get access also to the communications. Each device has in it a secret key, and when the device is manufactured, that key is split into two parts. And then when the government has their court order, those two parts are loaded into a device which will then combine them and then decrypt the communications on the channel. And so the Clipper chip will ensure that if people are using this encryption scheme, they won't be able to use it counter to the interests of society.
But what shall happen to America? Who will run the country?
Leave everything to me.
Opposing Dorothy Denning and the Clinton administration's struggle to sell Clipper to the people, groups like Computer Professionals for Social Responsibility actively campaign to inform the public on issues of privacy. Policy analyst David Banasar explains the impact this proposed surveillance technology is having in America.
CPSR is a membership group mostly made up of computer scientists and others in the computer industry. We started originally looking at the social implications of using computers for military purposes. Star Wars was one notable example of stuff we worked on back in the early 80s. Since then, we've moved on and are now looking at on how generally technology affects society, especially in this particular office in Washington, D.C., we look at civil liberties issues, how technology affects privacy, and how technology affects free speech. There's a lot of people out there opposing Clipper. In fact, with the exception of your previous interviewee, nobody is supporting Clipper out there. American industry is almost universally against it. The civil liberties groups all oppose it. Even international industry has been strongly opposed to it. The International Chamber of Commerce came out against it fairly recently.
Do you think Dorothy has a point at all? And if she doesn't, why doesn't she?
Well, I think the difference between Dorothy's position and ours is the basic difference in how we feel the relationship between a government and its people is. She is willing to trust the government to act within its lawful behaviors and to always act in the best interest, whereas we take a slightly more skeptical view of the world.
Leave everything to me.
There's a couple problems depending on which perspective. From a privacy perspective, it's that the government is asking for us to give them the equivalent of us giving them our house keys and then them trusting not to break in and drink our liquor when we don't want them to. From a technological standpoint, it's a real nightmare for companies or anybody who wants to do real security to have to implement this chip into all their products. The other, from a purely technical standpoint, is that most companies nowadays, whether they're hardware companies or software companies, are writing things in software. They write a program, and if they screw up the program, they can just start over again. They can replace the software with new software. If you build something into your system with hardware, it's going to cost a lot more because you have to build all the necessary circuits that go into it. But in addition, if it's bad, if it goes wrong somehow, if it gets compromised, you're going to have to throw the whole thing out and start all over again with a new piece of hardware rather than just simply reprogramming. In reality, Clipper has been around for at least 4 years. It was started under the Bush administration, and they were probably thinking about it under the Reagan administration. Under the Reagan administration, there was some pretty widespread domestic surveillance here. People that opposed his plans in Central America were constantly being spied on. And also regular library users. The FBI was going to libraries and saying, if you have a foreign name, then we want to know if you're reading anything that we don't think you should be.
I think that's just nonsense, and it comes from a lack of understanding on the people who say that about what kind of threats are really out there. It's true that the threats have changed over time, but that doesn't mean that they're not there. The threat of international organized crime, for example, is becoming a more serious problem globally, and to the extent that we can't effectively deal with it in our country, it's going to become a more serious problem here as well. Wiretaps have been one of the key tools that have been used to deal with organized crime. Wiretaps and other methods of electronic surveillance, as I understand it, have been used in all the major organized crime cases here. And so if we lose that capability, potentially we could suffer some really devastating consequences, I think, in our effectiveness dealing with international organized crime, which is, you know, going to create a worse situation worldwide. Another area is terrorism, and there again, I believe wiretaps, I heard, were used in over 90% of those cases.
Terrorists won't use it in the first place. If they're smart enough to use an encryption device, they're going to be smart enough not to use that. So basically, it's only going to be the people who can't afford anything better are going to use Clipper.
Also skeptical of the government and Dorothy Denny's position on Clipper is John Perry Barlow from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. He believes the technology is open to abuse.
Government is, by its nature, inclined to invade all the possibility spaces of control that it can get its hands on.
Chaos! Chaos! Oh, chaos!
Had enough.
Based on everything I've seen so far, I think that the controls will be extremely good, and I consider that risk is going to be acceptably low. I think it would be very hard for somebody either in or outside of the government to conduct an illegal wiretap with Clipper. There's a lot of auditing features so that ultimately you'll be able to trace back from the release of a key all the way back to whose line was actually tapped with that.
Dorothy has a lot more faith in the morality of government with unlimited power than I do. She seems to think that existing legal constraints on the spook houses and the FBI are going to be sufficient to hold them from unethical behavior, even after they've reached the ability to automatically monitor the transactions of just about everybody who uses communications. Security apparatus in this country rose up during the course of the Cold War to being one of the fundamental elements of the economy. There are hundreds of thousands of people who make their car payments on the basis of a threat which somehow no longer exists. So in the absence of that threat, they've had no choice but to foment new ones.
iSpy with my little radio eye. something beginning with RN, Radio National, right across Australia.
I have probably as many conspiracy theories as most people, but conspiracies do exist, after all. Clipper chip, yes, indeed. The clipper chip is a complete phony, because, in fact, it would be very easy to defeat the clipper chip so that even if it is in the equipment, the government can't read it, simply by encrypting the message a couple of times beforehand, creating a scramble that the government cannot read by the same method. The ostensible purpose to make it possible for the feds to read everyone's transmission is total bullshit, since they would not be able to read the transmissions of anyone who cared. The genuine purpose has to be, and can only be, to create a situation where they can search and seize on suspicion of conspiracy to encrypt. And that will give them the right to seize the computers and the possessions of anyone who is under suspicion of encrypting.
Well, I don't believe in conspiracies. I believe that what is generally regarded to be conspiracy is simply the automatically united endeavors of various forms of self-interest. I mean, you don't require a conspiracy to see that there are people that want to enhance governmental control for their own institutional purposes. These large agencies are like organisms, and they want to survive, and they want to have as much control as they can possibly get.
How do we know the cypherpunks can't be accused of the same thing?
Well, the cypherpunks seem to be trying to create a system where control is simply not possible to anybody.
David, I'm wondering, you might be a good person to ask this.
What is a cypherpunk? And what do they do?
They tend to believe that cryptography is the solution to all of our problems. I'm a little skeptical of that particular scenario myself. But they are very active in discussing among themselves technical solutions for various problems such as Clipper. I mean, cryptography is a tool that can be used to solve some privacy problems, but it doesn't solve all of them. It can certainly be used to make communication secure, but it doesn't secure us from government bureaucracies ordering us to give information to them and then matching that information among themselves or passing it on, or doesn't keep businesses from doing the same. Just as right now you give a $50 bill when you go out to a restaurant and there's no transactional data which can be then collected and looked at, cryptography can be used to create a digital cache which can do the same. The same will also work for intelligent vehicle highway systems. It can be used to protect medical records on smart cards, a variety of ways, which is being developed by a researcher named David Chaum in Amsterdam.
VisiCash as a company is developing what's called prepaid systems where value is stored on a card or in your computer, and then it's used to make low-value payments. And if you lose your money, you can get it back. You can always prove that you made a certain payment, but no one can find out who you paid unless you agree. So you retain that ability to withhold who you are making payments to. But still, the systems are auditable, and they're very unattractive compared to paper money or other means for use in any kind of illicit activity. Just like the prepaid smart card, which is being launched in Sydney, I believe, you can use that card to pay for all kinds of incidental things like pay phones, vending machines, purchases at point of sale, still preserving your anonymity, so in a way that allows the entity you're paying to receive the money, but without allowing them to also discover your identity.
there's a lot of different definitions of privacy, but anonymity, clearly the right to not have to identify yourself wherever you go and leave a trail for whatever you have done is a key part of privacy. You know, the right to be left alone, to not always be accountable for everything you did. If you go to a grocery store and buy a six-pack, is there a reason for them to have that information? And is there a reason for a big database somewhere to collect that you bought a six-pack on Monday and a 12-pack on Tuesday, which maybe you bought for your neighbor anyway?
There's a war out there, old friend, a world war. And it's not about who's got the most bullets. It's about who controls the information. What we see and hear, how we work, what we think. It's all about the information.
In Australia, I suppose we have a whole pile of things happening. And I don't see the same as I do in the United States. First of all, one, we've already permitted a form of scrambling between a mobile telephone, a GSM telephone, and the base station. That's called the A5 cipher. Now, that is not a cryptotype cipher at all. That is a cipher which doesn't have a back door to it at all. Now, that's an operation right now if you're using your GSM telephone. Between the handset and your base station, now note that, not between a base station and, say, a telephone in an office, but at least between the handset and the base station, the radio part of it, is actually scrambled using the A5 cipher. Any form of cable television, which, for example, the ABC may take a part in, will use encryption. Otherwise, there'll be no way of charging for those TV programs. In other words, normally what happens in a cable television service is that the signal coming down the cable system is scrambled, and people pay money per month to get the unscrambling capability. Now, so encryption or scrambling is the only way we know of, technically, to provide security, privacy, integrity, authenticity, all those services we need once we move to computer and telecommunications networks. There's no other technique known. Cryptography is our tool of trade for providing those security services we need in data communications, computer systems, and the telecommunications network. May I say, for example, the much-hyped superhighway of the future will absolutely depend upon cryptography.
I don't think most people have a clue what the word cryptography means. One thing I was, just before you rang back, I was quickly thinking, hell, how do I popularize the notion of cryptography? And I thought, well, there are ways to do it. Because essentially what the Clipper Chip is trying to say is that the government has the right to say that you're allowed to speak any of the following: English, Spanish, Pidgin, or Tagalog, because we've got native speakers of all those languages who monitor your lines, but you're not allowed to speak Slovenian, Hindustani, or any of these other ones because we don't have a translator handy. And it's no good if we can't intersect and listen to what you're saying. That's the essence of what the cryptography argument's about, the government dictating what forms of communication mechanisms we can use and what kinds of garbling we're allowed to impose.
Chaos does have ways of making a man talk.
Now, remember, there's a technical issue as well. The Clipper chip is designed to work in the U.S. telephone system. And remember, it's still a telephone chip at this stage. At this stage, there isn't yet a chip for handling data communications. There's proposed to be one. Now, the Australian telephony system, as I understand it, is rather different technically from the United States one, and therefore I suspect that particular chip might not work, but the design would. All they'd have to do would be to change some interfacing and build a slightly different chip that would interface the Australian system. The pattern, I'm sure, would work. The important point about the particular cryptographic scheme that's used is that the spooked agencies have got the ability to crack the cryptography, so they can listen in but nobody else can. So the theory goes, and that's probably going to be the practice as well. It probably will be, for practical purposes, uncrackable. If they were in a position to totally impose that on every telephone in the United States, or from our viewpoint, on every telephone in Australia, then I'd be much more concerned. But at this stage, that is not what they're proposing. They're proposing that it is a standard that may be used by government agencies in the United States. So it seems like a reasonably soft argument at the moment.
I believe the Clipper chip is taking an atomic bomb to a situation which may need a drop of antiseptic.
Professor Jennifer Seabury, from Wollongong University Centre for Computer Security Research.
Now, another issue that isn't addressed in all of this is the cost issue, that you have to buy the Clipper chip from an American company. You have to buy it in American dollars. Say it costs you $1,000 American for it, for example. Well, there's lots of little people out there who may not want to spend $1,000, or little companies, small businesses, for whom buying this one and then when it's upgraded 3 years later they have to buy another one, and there's no standards and they're always following behind. So it's a financial burden on the smaller users. It's a thing which is going to be easy for big business, big organisations and Big Brother, but it is counter to the interests of the small people. And I think that we've got to think through these issues a lot more carefully before we accept technology from another government which is set up for their own situation and which is hotly contested in their own country.
My name is Trudy McIntosh and I'm a high technology and multimedia writer for the national paper The Australian. I'm also a contributing editor for the national magazine MIS. I cover all areas from the latest Hollywood multimedia deals being signed right through to the Clipper chip scenario and data security issues. Well, at the moment, unless we start using the information that we're collecting and spreading it across our networks, we face a very strong threat from the thriving Asia-Pacific region countries who are doing very nicely out of this. Countries like Taiwan, Japan, China is certainly very adept at this. India is moving full steam ahead. Many of our Asia-Pacific neighbours are far more sophisticated than us in gathering information and using it wisely right across their networks. And we certainly have to compete. And this means we have to use more of our and share more of our information across our networks. We have to try and boost our exports to this region and at the same time become much more shrewd about our intelligence gathering.
I will give you an example of how we may be missing the boat. The Japanese developed their own indigenous encryption algorithm, which we call FEAL. And FEAL was presented at international conferences, and it was broken. So they put out a new version, and that was broken. They put out a new version, and it's getting a bit harder to break it. But everybody said, aren't the Japanese stupid? You know, they're putting out their algorithms, and everybody's breaking them. And a lot of us felt, though, aren't they smart? They put out their algorithms and they get the best people in the world to find out what's wrong with them for free. Well, the Japanese, having got a version of FEAL now, which is in all of their products, but while we were preoccupied with our own problems, the Japanese have gone and sold it. They've sold it to all of the Middle East. They've sold it to the whole of Africa. They went into new and different markets. Australia could have had that. We've developed encryption in the centre. But we can't get it approved for export in any version at all.
Rumours coming out of Canberra indicate that Canberra is very wary of the hostile reaction that the Clipper chip debate has already received in America. The American public's not happy about it one iota. The days of it being introduced are still very far off. In fact, I doubt that it will get off the ground. I think it's going to collapse.
Yes, things are done through the back door, and there is this phenomenon called function creep. Once you get something useful like the tax file number in, then you'd want to use it for something else, wouldn't you? It'd be very easy to justify. So yes, there are fears like that, but I think we've got to avoid painting the government as a bunch of devils from beginning to end. There are some things the government needs to do. Let's look at it from another perspective. On behalf of Australian patients, let's say, I'm concerned to ensure that as the health communications network in Australia develops, that there'd be suitable privacy protections embodied in it, which means encrypting data travelling along telephone lines. So I'm quite pleased if governments are thinking seriously about getting encryption working in places where encryption should work.
the idea that governments should actually establish an encryption scheme for themselves isn't of itself a bad thing. It's how they do it, it's how much they impose on the populace with it, and it's the extent to which they create the scope for a future totalitarian government to repress individuals' thinking and speaking. They're the real issues.
The world isn't run by weapons anymore, or energy, or money. It's run by little ones and zeros, little bits of data. It's all just electrons.
I don't care.
I don't expect other people to understand this, but I do expect you to understand this. We started this journey together.
It wasn't a journey, God.
It was a prank. There's a war out there, old friend. A world war. And it's not about who's got the most bullets. It's about who controls the information. What we see and hear, how we work, what we think. It's all about the information.
If I were you, I'd destroy that thing.
Today's data stream was constructed by Matthew Green, John Jacobs, and myself, Rosie Cross. Additional sound permutations by Rob Joyner, Jr.